It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Your host, Charlie Potter, here on WGN Radio. Thank you very much for joining me. We've got a really great show this morning with one of the true legends in conservation in America. He's far too honest to admit that, but you're going to learn in the next few minutes why this individual has been at the center of virtually every significant accomplishment for funding of conservation that over the last 30 years or more. It's John Cooper, the former director of South Dakota's Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Department, former secretary of the department, former vice chairman of the North American Wetlands Conservation Act. John Cooper has been involved in writing white papers and doing analysis on how to have the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which you all read about this week, I think, or heard on the radio, being signed into law by President Trump. John Cooper has been at the center of all of these discussions for the past many years in making our taxpayers' dollars go further, but also in bringing ideas to the table. And I am really privileged to have been able to pull John Cooper out of a fishing boat and have you on the air this morning. John, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Charlie. That's quite an introduction. I don't know. Your listeners might have to take 20% off of that, but I'm happy to be here and talk with you.
Well, there are probably some other people who know you well who might want to take more than 20% off, John. But I've had the pleasure, for those of you listening, I've known John Cooper for close to 30 years. I met him on the prairies of North Dakota with also another legend in our industry, Lloyd Jones. And, John, it was 5 years ago when I called you and suggested that the Land and Water Conservation Fund at that time, which you well knew, might be in jeopardy of, forget the reauthorization, might be in jeopardy of just simply going away. And going away because people didn't understand the benefits it had, and it was being emasculated and pork barrel. And I asked you if you and a group of people would work with me and others to come up with a blueprint for how the Land and Water Conservation Fund could be rejuvenated and advanced. And lo and behold, 5 years later, it's happened, John. The largest conservation fund in the history of America, if not the world, has now been given permanent authorization. And you are really one of the authors, the architects of good business principles. So you want to talk for a minute about your longtime involvement with LWCF and why it's so important to the future of conservation in America.
I will, and thanks for that. Those accolades, but boy, as you know, and you having been in the conservation world for a long time, nothing ever happens by any single person. It takes a lot of work through a whole series of people that are interested in conservation to get something like the Great American Outdoors Act that was just passed, which included $900 million funding for a Land and Water Conservation Fund. This fund is something that we just could never figure out why Congress wouldn't help us with this. This fund is funded by royalties that oil companies pay primarily in the Gulf of Mexico, and some are paid for in the Santa Barbara locations. But the bottom line of this thing is that it's not taxpayers paying for this. It's people involved with oil exploration on a public and private business plan where the oil companies are making a significant amount of money off of what in essence is a public resource, the oil within the 12-mile limit and the continental shelf. And our point, the conservation at this point, was, hey, look, we have a lot of issues that require mitigation out here as we build and work on farmland and build certain projects. We need to be looking at our natural resources, things like water, water quality, water quantity, flood control, issues involving wildlife habitats, those kind of measures, which seem to kind of go unfunded. So for all these years, we have worked hard to get, number one, get the Land and Water Conservation Fund appropriated every year, and the last thing was, can we ever get it for that $900 million a year annual appropriation without having to go back to Congress every year to fight for this budget. So it's huge for anybody that is a person that loves the outdoors, a recreationist, a fisher, a hunter, a bird watcher. It's the whole gamut, and it's funded to a point where we will start making we'll make grants and grant requests through a variety of different sources so that we can combine partnership funds to make that go even farther. So it's quite a gift. I thank Congress for the effort that's been made, but boy, it's been a long time in the making.
Well, and John, we're listening to John Cooper, the former Secretary of Idaho, of South Dakota Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, Vice Chairman of the North American Wetlands Conservation Act. And for those in the outdoor world and the conservation world, truly one of the leaders in thought for a long time. And John, I have to say that I parroted a lot of what you pulled together in your white paper of recommendations for how to make the Land and Water Conservation Fund work. And the Chicago Tribune this week published a op-ed or commentary that I wrote in support of reauthorization. And I did, as you know, cite the work that your team had done in helping Congress understand why this was not a waste of money, but also how it could be improved. Let me ask you before we move to other areas, which, of course, I want to talk about South Dakota and what's going on and your thoughts for the fall and what you're seeing in as far as use of public resources in this remarkably terrible time we're in and how people are going outdoors, which is great, but for the wrong reasons. Your thoughts quickly, maybe in 2 minutes or so, how do we ensure the Land and Water Conservation Fund does not become this just public trough, if you will, where the spoils are awarded not on merit but on political clout? And before you answer that, John, I have to say it's very easy, and you know this, as I think as everyone listening, Congress had a $900 million pot of money, and they would steal the money every year and write an IOU back to the fund, which is now, what, $20 billion large or something, because they had other uses for the fund. So this law, if I'm correct, and I wanted to just cover this before you went on to maybe how we stop abuses, this law stops that from happening. They can't go and decide, you know, we want $300 million so we can build a shipyard in Congressman Smith's district because, you know, we want him to get reelected. They can't do that anymore, right?
That's correct. That's probably one of the main features of this act, Charlie, because, you know, Congress, you talk a lot of boondoggle projects and greasing each other's palm back and forth. I have real concerns about the way some of these things are put into appropriations bills, you know, to help each other's out. And this particular act now takes the money directly from the oil royalties, puts it into a fund that is designated for specific uses only, and it can't be borrowed from. And that's something we had worked hard on for a long time. Yourself, you're really familiar with all this, and you've been at it. One of the things we need to do, speaking very quickly here, is that we need to also invite private industry, private dollars, NGOs like Ducks Unlimited and Nature Conservancy, whoever is involved in outdoor activities and recreational activities, to be partners in making this money even go farther. And that's why several of the things that we've talked about doing would ensure that the dollars are spent in the right way, because not only do you have just the federal entities involved with how this money is spent, but you have private entities and the private sector who will run checks and be involved in checks and balances on how that fund is set up. So it's got great potential. So what we have to do now is follow through with some other checks and balances to make sure it goes to where it's got it, where it should go.
Well, let's come back after a brief break, John, and I'd love to talk about your thoughts on what's happening in the outdoor industry this summer, as I talk almost every week about how resources are being overrun, but what you see in South Dakota and what some of your thoughts are as individuals, many for the first time, are buying equipment to go kayaking or fishing, and how we might engage them in this overall effort to really be great stewards of our natural resources. We're visiting with John Cooper, the former Secretary of South Dakota Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and one of the great leaders in America on conservation. You are listening to Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, Northwestern Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And if you're just joining me, we're visiting with John Cooper from South Dakota. And I won't run John through all the accolades you've received in your life once again, but he is a stalwart in the outdoor industry. Also, interestingly, John Cooper is a former federal agent who has experiences that, John, if we had 3 or 4 days of radio uninterrupted, we would never grow old of hearing your tales. So, John, we've been talking about the benefits of the Land and Water Conservation Fund and what it could mean to the future of conservation funding. What about what's happening right now? How, take South Dakota, which many of us here in the Midwest know well, and we come up every fall to go pheasant hunting. Are we going to be able to come pheasant hunting? Are the lodges going to be open? What does the whole picture look like? Are the parks and everything being overrun? What are you seeing in one of the truly great recreation states in the country?
Well, it is interesting, and I've watched it kind of develop. Right up until January, we usually go through that situation, you know, where it's just in the latter forms of winter and everybody's kind of inside, et cetera. And we're looking forward for February and March to break winter and everybody go back outside. South Dakota is composed of outside people. That's where we live outside, and it's just that's the way it's been ever since the settlers arrived there. But this year, when the announcements came on the COVID thing around February and March, and it started to get very, very serious, we went through a lot of the same situations that everybody did throughout the country. Do we close down our restaurants? Do we close down lodges? What do we do in regards to eating, social distancing, all that stuff? We had to go through the same iterations that everybody else has. Now, when you look at one of the things that the medical people are telling us, one of the best things you can do is go outside. Get out of inside, try to meet the virus head on, get outside and get out in, with some activities. So what South Dakota did and the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks did is we reinvigorated our invitations to people to come to the parks. Second thing we did is we talked about how good it was to go down and take your kayak or take your small fishing boat or your big ranger, whatever it might be, and get outside. You know, wear your mask in the truck, get in the boat, you can take your mask off, enjoy everybody, but keep your social distancing as much as you possibly can. And South Dakota's taken that to heart. And our visitation from people outside the state and the actual residents enjoying the parks and the boats and all that stuff that I'm talking about, that's really taken off. And I have a real good friend who's a boat dealer, and he said that up until the late part of February, when the weather actually broke and people were looking at going outside, he experienced the largest increase in the boat sales, outdoor motorboat or the outboard motor sales, trailer sales, RV trailer sales, tent sales, the whole nine yards. So there's been a little documented, a rise due to the issues with people wanting to get outside. So it's an amazing deal, and that's what's happened. And yes, we're going to be open for everybody that wants to come. I think the pheasant populations are actually coming back. I'm talking about the wild birds. And we're seeing, because this year's winter wasn't too bad, we're seeing a lot of broods that are in 8, 9, and 10 numbers for little guys. And so I think you're going to see an increase over and above our past 3 or 4 years.
Well, John Cooper, we're speaking with in South Dakota, former Secretary of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks there, among other things. John, we've got a couple minutes left, and I'd like to ask you, I was going to ask you to tell a story about maybe your most fond or funny memory of a game violation in your career across America. But I think let's do that for another show sometime. Because while we're on this track, can I ask you in the next 90 seconds or so, what is the single greatest threat you see to the future of bird life on the prairies, which of course means it's the cradle for everything? that fly south, whether you like songbirds or waterfowl or whatever it might be bird-wise, what's the biggest threat you see on the prairies and in South Dakota to our future?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about it, the fact that all of us agree. And that's land conversion for agricultural purposes, Charlie. The issues here are in Canada and in North Dakota and in South Dakota are situations where people are wholesale draining wetlands, draining them into roadside ditches in many cases or into existing larger wetlands. That has resulted, by the way, in some of the most major floods we've had downstream to the Missouri River and the Missouri River into the Mississippi River. And as an example, in the Missouri area on the Missouri drainage, all that water that comes out of North and South Dakota eventually, except for the Red River, which runs north in eastern North Dakota, but all that stuff goes downstream, builds heads on the head of water, comes down, and eventually dumps into the Missouri, which at this point has had a hell of a problem regards to flooding in the Nebraska, Missouri, and southern South Dakota locations. That water is, a lot of it is contributed by agriculture conversion into crops, primarily soybean and corn. And so the habitat that was there as a result of the prairie being there and the wetlands being there has been significantly altered in both Canada and in the Dakotas.
So hopefully with what we've been talking about over the last half an hour, John, some of that can be addressed with ways to help agriculture keep some water on the land and some cover. John, I thank you so very much for being with us. We'll talk again soon. And you are, John, a legend in the outdoor industry, whether you want to accept that accolade or not. Thanks for being with me this morning. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. I'll be with you next Sunday morning with much more on the great outdoors.